Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. If you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on rare earths and forbidden cures when we come back. You know, during World War II, our parents and grandparents planted victory gardens, and they helped to provide their own food and fiber for themselves and their country. Today, more than half of the food that we eat is now imported from outside of our borders. Our food is produced from hybrid seed that will not reproduce, and it is nutritionally deficient. And Adolf Steinbraun of Fairbanks, Iowa, put this matter into perspective by having samples of his corn tested for nutrients that are usually added to commercial feeds. When compared to more than 4,000 samples of this hybridized corn tested in 10 Midwest states in a recent year, Steinbraun's open-pollinated corn contained 75% more crude protein, 875% more copper, 345% more iron, 205% more manganese, and the same result was also seen in the content of calcium, sodium, magnesium, and zinc. So in the opinion of many ecologic farmers, hybrid seed merely masks poor farming practices by producing bins and bushels of foodless food without the nutrients that are really food's reason for being. Now, if you'd like to know more about this multinational corporate monopoly of our seed and food supplies and how you can become independent from it, why don't you call and order my free General Law CD package first? That's the place to start. It's a 4-hour commentary on the law in general. It's educational, informative, entertaining. Best of all, it's free. You can call and order yours right now. The number is 417-273-4967. If you're online, go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Click onto the email machine and send an email request for that free General Law CD package. Again, georgegordon.org, or call direct 417-273-4967. Do it right now before you forget. Joe Wallach, Joel, J-O-E-L, Joel Wallach, wrote a book called Rare Earths. We're reviewing that book. And chapter 3, the chapter is called Our Earth is Anemic, the Argument for Expensive Urine. If you remember last time, I told you, if health comes out of the minerals, which is the argument that Wallach is putting forward, then what difference does it make if half of the minerals go down your septic system? As long as your body has access to all of the minerals, 100% of the minerals that your body needs, 100% of the time, whatever's extra, whatever's left over, is going to go out in your urine. But boys and girls, if you've only got 90% of the minerals that you need, then none of that mineral is going to go out into your septic system. But your body is going to be 10% short, and the 10% shortage is going to translate into disease. Now, your common sense, you know, ought to say, well, I'd rather have 110 or 120 or 220% more than I need to make sure that my body always has 100%. You know, when you fill up your gas tank, you know, when you get to be an old guy like I am, we fill the gas tank. I fill the gas tank on my way to town, and I fill my gas tank just before I get home. When I leave the house, my gas tank is full. Why do I do that? Because I can remember as a kid, we used to pull into the gas station and put in a dollar's worth of regular. I mean, if you put in $3, I mean, you were really a big-time spender putting $3 in the gas tank. And then, of course, once in a while, you'd run out of gas. And then, of course, you'd have to jump out of your pickup and then grab your gas can and start walking to the next farm so that you could buy a gallon or two of gas so that you could come back and put a couple of gallons in your pickup so you could make it to the gas station. You know, that's kind of dumb. When your gas tank gets low, it's time to fill up. So I always keep my gas tank full. I run my body that way too. I want my body to be full of calcium, full of protein, full of copper, iron, and all of the minerals that it needs. I always run on a full tank. I used to fly airplanes for a long time. I never did put $3 worth of regular into my airplane and then go flying. I don't know of any pilot that's ever done that. There might be some, but no, I always filled up the tank. And then we're very careful about monitoring the fuel, you know, as it's being used. We don't just watch the gas gauge. Your airplane's got a gas gauge, but we don't pay a lot of attention to that gas gauge. We fill the tank, we open the cap, we look inside, and we see it's full. We know that the gas tank holds 27.5 gallons, and we know that the airplane burns 8.5 gallons per hour at cruising power. We know it burns 12 gallons an hour at takeoff power. So when we take off, we measure the amount of takeoff power that we use. And then we lean the fuel mixture down to the 8.5 gallons an hour. And then we watch our watch, and we keep track of our fuel consumption with a pen and paper, not with a gas gauge. Pen and paper. You know, I could be flying across country over here, and my gas gauge could say empty, and I'm going to sit there and say, no, sir, that tank ain't empty. That tank has still got 42 minutes worth of fuel in it, or whatever. Well, Joel Wallach comes up with the answer now to this concept that I mentioned to you last time, where the doctors, the medical doctors, say you get all the food that you need, and it comes out of your food. You get all the minerals and nutrients that you need out of your food. And I showed you last time that's not true. Not true at all. And then, secondly, over here, they say, well, you're just wasting your money. Okay, so I'd rather waste 50 cents a day than to spend $9,200 a year. I can spend 50 cents a day and piss it all down the toilet. And you can spend $25 a day on health insurance, and you can spend your time in the hospital. I'm not here to persuade you. I'm just here to tell you. Let me give you the facts. The earth is anemic. Our earth is anemic, a potentially apocalyptic mixture of mining, deforestation, farming, irrigation, and acid rain has shifted, eroded, or leached our life-giving and life-sustaining raw materials from our formerly mineral-rich land. Unfortunately, we were given a finite amount of raw materials in the earth's crust, and without regular and large numbers of mineral-rich meteors or volcanic eruptions like Mount St. Helens, we are forced to make do with what we have. There are those who would remineralize mountain ranges, forest farms, and yes, whole continents to get minerals into our crops and therefore into our human food chain. But when you put that into economic perspective, these pipe dreams are not sustainable. To remineralize the earth is technically possible, but as a realistic project, it would be an economic impossibility. To remineralize the earth for one growing season, we would have to grind up the equivalent of Mauna Loa, the colossal Hawaiian mountain volcano, every year, and then redistribute the resultant rock dust several times each year to coincide with soil preparation and planting. To comprehend the enormity of this task, you have to appreciate that Mauna Loa is the most massive mountain in the world and is also the largest volcano. It's 14,000 feet high in round numbers, 14,000 feet above the surface of the Pacific Ocean. It has another 17,000 feet underneath the ocean down to the bedrock. It's taller, you know, it's a mile taller than Mount Everest. Mauna Loa's total mass is 100 times larger than Mount St. Helens in Washington State. The lava that forms the massive dome could cover the land masses of the earth with 4 feet of additional mineral dust. As a result of such a Herculean effort, your hamburger would reach an eye-popping price of $275 per pound, and corn would reach $35 an ear. Now, how's that for sticker shock? Well, when Charles Darwin sailed the Beagle to the east coast of South America in 1833, he recorded a fine red dust accumulating on his ship every day and correctly deduced that the dust originated in West Africa. This African dust, in its westerly flight, travels all the way to the Amazon basin and rainforests, where it is essential to replenishing the rain-leached mineral poor soils of the rainforests. It does it every year. Man has always realized the enormity of the great and the tireless power of the Earth's winds, but their importance to the biological vitality of the Earth and the mineral value of our food is far beyond what we have ever dreamed. There are many wind currents east to west. Those wind currents transport great loads of mineral dust across predictable routes. They link whole ecosystems hundreds and even thousands of miles apart. Billions of tons, billions and billions of tons of mineral-rich dust from the deserts of Asia and Africa annually fertilize oceans and rainforests halfway around the world. Michael Garstang, he's a professor of meteorology at the University of Virginia in Charlottesville, says during the violent Amazonian rainstorms, the particulate matter that originate in African deserts are literally sucked out of the sky. Garstang and his colleagues calculated that 13 million tons of African and Asian mineral-rich dust enter the Amazonian soils every year to enrich the rain-leached and depleted tropical soils. 13 million tons a year from Africa and Asia. This wind-borne African dust adds essential and critical minerals to help maintain the rainforest's productivity. While the Amazon basin teems with life, the soil itself lacks reserves of nutrients, especially phosphates, which spur plant growth. The historical record shows that the Amazon rainforest has periodically shrunk to a fraction of its present size and then rebounded back again, and the researchers now believe that it expands and contracts as the amount of nourishing African dust waxes and wanes with mirror changes in the Sahara Desert. The principal minerals found in the coarse inorganic fraction of soil are directly related to those minerals present in the local parent stock. Minerals that are resistant to weathering, such as quartz, are especially abundant in soils, while minerals that weather quickly are rare or are totally absent. It is therefore possible to calculate the relative age or maturity of a soil covering igneous rocks from its content of primary minerals. For example, feldspar, mica, amphiboles, and pyroxenes, these relatively soluble minerals are common in young soils and less abundant in mature soils, and absent from senescent soils, whatever a senescent is. Soils covering sandstone often contain 90 to 99% quartz. Those soils overlying limestone are made up of as much as 80% calcium carbonate. It's obvious that minerals are not equally distributed in the soil, and the scary part is that fields where our food crops are grown do not contain a uniform blanket of minerals. If they contain any nutritional minerals at all, they occur in veins, much like the chocolate swirls found in chocolate ripple ice cream. At best, depending solely on getting minerals from good soil, from food grown in soil, is a very risky crapshoot. Now, these trace elements are defined as those elements present in soils in amounts of less than 0.1% by weight. 60% of all trace minerals are found in the coarse, inorganic fraction of the soil. Rare earths refers to any of a large series of very similar oxides of metals contained or obtained from widely distributed but relatively scarce minerals. The rare earth metals are often divided into three groups according to the method of separating them. They're called cerium metals, terbium metals and yttrium metals. The atomic numbers of these rare earth metals, with the exception of yttrium, considered by some not to be a true rare earth metal, are consecutive from 57 to 71. Beryllium and thorium and zirconium are also included as rare earths by some geochemists. Rare earths added to laboratory animals' diets as a supplement to a well-recognized major and trace mineral have doubled the expected lifespan of the species. Human nutrition pundits recognize new nutrients as valuable for humans anywhere from 50 to 1,000 years after they're recognized in animal nutrition. These rare earths, known to be so vital to animal health and longevity, and most probably our human health and longevity also, are no longer found in our food supply in any consistent or significant amounts. The only warranty that we have to adequate rare earth intake for us humans is daily supplementation. Pause right here. I don't know that that's true. There may be places in the world where there's enough nutrients or vitamins and minerals. But I know that here in the Midwest, there in our soils here in the Midwest in general, there's a shortage of iodine, and therefore there is a higher propensity for goiter. Now, goiter is called Adam's apple. And when I was a kid, it was very common for people to have this Adam's apple or goiter. Very common. So the government got into the picture somehow or another, and they decided that what they would do is iodize salt. So when you buy salt, it says right on the package, iodized salt or plain salt. My granny, when she sent me to the store to buy salt, would tell me, "Now you be sure to get iodized salt." "Oh, okay, granny." So I'd go over to the store. Hell, I didn't know what the hell iodized salt was. But I was sure to tell the grocer, "My granny wants iodized salt." "Oh, certainly, little Georgie." And he'd run over and pick out the iodized salt for me and bring it back. Now, I couldn't even read iodized versus plain. But when I got home, "Oh, good boy, little Georgie, you got iodized salt. We need iodized salt to prevent goiter." What the hell does a five-year-old kid know about goiter? See, but now as an old man, I can remember my granny, who was very familiar with goiter, very familiar with Adam's apple and iodized salt. Today, I can't ever remember seeing anybody in recent times with goiter. There's probably some around, but I haven't seen any. And that's because we don't have the mineral shortage. We don't have the iodine deficiency here in the United States that we used to have. Now, in people out in California on the West Coast and people on the East Coast, they didn't have goiter, just in the Midwest. It's the Midwestern soils that don't have it. Now, there's other soils that don't have any boron in them. And boron is a necessary trace element. I don't remember what the disease is. If you don't have enough boron, you get some kind of a disease. Just like if you don't have enough vitamin C, you get scurvy. If you don't have enough iodine, you get goiter. If you don't have enough selenium, you get Alzheimer's disease. If you don't have enough boron, something happens to you and you come up with this symptom. Well, this book on rare earths identifies all of the symptoms that go along with all these diseases. That's why I'm suggesting that you get a copy of it, because Wallach goes through here and as I said, this is a 500-page book. I can cover 5, 6, 7 pages per program. I can select, I don't know how many chapters there are. Let me count them up here for you. You've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14. You've got 13 chapters, plus an introduction and a foreword, and a bibliography and an index. 13 chapters. The best I can do, kids, is just scratch the surface a little for you. Tell you about these rare earths. And why is it that they're important? Well, because you got to have 90 nutrients in your diet. And if you've got 89, you're going to come up with one symptom. If you've got 88, you'll come up with two symptoms, and if you get to 76, you'll come up with more symptoms. And pretty soon, you know, when you're minerally deficient or vitamin deficient, you come down with cancer and heart attack and stroke. And I read to you some obituaries. I think I was in program number one. And he's got a bunch of these neat obituaries in here, like Moses Gunn, age 64, stage screen actor. Former Yarmouth officer Thomas Minkler dies at 42. I mean, and these are people that are dying in their 30s and 40s and 50s and 60s, not at age 75 and a half, which is the average lifespan. I don't know how many he's got in here, but he's probably got 50. And he's got I'm looking at page 309 here. Hispanics are at higher risk for diabetes. And so he's got diabetes pictures on here showing a toe that's rotting off and a big sore on this guy's arm. This is what you get from diabetes. Now, diabetic ulcer and gangrene on his toe resulting from chronic chrome and vanadium deficiency. You people that have, you people out there, you know, that are taking insulin and you're trying to treat your diabetes, you have mineral deficiencies. That's why you have diabetes. Fortunately, the medical profession comes along and they say, well, look, we can identify your malady. We can copyright that. We can patent it. And if anybody goes out here and claims diabetic or diabetes, we'll sue them. You know, it's like using the Coca-Cola trademark. We'll sue you for patent infringement. Okay, so now you know what you got. We called it diabetes. What if you called it rotten flesh disease? What the hell difference does it make? What you call it? The real key to this is what caused it. And what tells you? Here's what caused it. Now, I would suggest that it costs a whole lot less, and then it's a hell of a lot easier, it would seem like to me, to take these supplements than it is to shoot up with insulin. I remember my mother-in-law, you know, she was a diabetic, and she was shooting up 2 or 3 times a day, you know, with a needle. God, those needles scare the living tar out of me. I don't think I could do that. I take a lot of getting used to. Now, I'm an old man. I don't have diabetes. And I'm going to do everything I can to avoid diabetes. Now, I'm not selling these supplements. I mean, don't write me a letter and say, gee, Mr. Gordon, I'd like to buy a bottle of these supplements. How much are they? I don't sell them. And you don't have to buy them from Wallach. Hell, you can go buy vitamin and mineral supplements at the health food store. And you can go to any drugstore and buy vitamin and mineral supplements. But that's doing what somebody tells you to do. I don't think you should do what I tell you to do. I think that you should educate yourself and know why you're doing it. There was an old Supreme Court justice. I really admired this guy. His name was William O. Douglas. And he filed more dissenting opinions in the Supreme Court than any other justice, past, present, or future. Well, I say future. I guess somebody in the future might do more than he did, but he filed more than anybody in the present or in the past. And he used to have a key line, and he would say, we have reached the right conclusion for all of the wrong reasons. And then he would go on to expound in his opinion. And he would explain. And that's why Wallach's book is so good, because this is like a catalog. I mean, this thing goes through and explains, here's why it works that way. I've often said that if I ever had a bitch with God, it was because he said, thou shalt not steal, and then never explained to me why. My dad was just like that. He would say, go to bed, it's 8 o'clock. He never explained to me at age 5, 6, or 8, you know, here's why you have to go to bed at age 8 to get your rest so that you can grow big and strong. You know, he never explained that to me. He just said, go to bed. Now, he stayed up till 10 or 12 o'clock at night. You know, I don't know how late he stayed up, but it was wee hours in the morning. He didn't follow the same rule that he applied to me. Now, it really isn't necessary for old dad to explain to a 5-year-old kid why he has to go to bed at 8 o'clock. It really isn't necessary. And I guess God has kind of taken the same position. To, listen, Gordon, it just really isn't necessary for me to explain to you why I'm telling you to do this. It's sufficient for me to tell you, don't do that. Do this, but don't do that. So in the Bible, we see these laws that require us to let the land rest once every 7 years. We have land Sabbaths, and we have Jubilee laws. We have 15 agricultural laws. And these laws are designed to maintain soil fertility so that the plants that you eat out of that soil have all of the vitamins and minerals that you need, so that you won't get sick and die from heart attack, stroke, or muscular dystrophy or multiple sclerosis. That's the purpose behind them. Of course, we are smarter than God, and we can hybridize our food. We can genetically manipulate it, and we can come up with more bins and bushels per acre. Unfortunately, that bins and bushels per acre doesn't have the nutrients in it that you need, and you find that we are the sickest nation in the world. Sickest in the world. We spend more money on medical doctors. We spend $1.6 trillion a year on medicine. We spend $500 billion a year on cancer. $500 billion a year on cancer. That's $5 trillion per decade. We've been doing that now for two or three decades. That's why I said to you last time, seems like to me it's time to tell these cancer quacks to pack up and get out. Now, you're spending $5 trillion in the 1990s. You're spending another $5 trillion in the first decade of the 21st century. And I'm going to make a prediction. I'm not even a damn prophet, and I think I can make a safe prediction. In the year 2011, after 10 full years of spending $500 billion a year treating cancer, looking for a cure to cancer, dealing with cancer, advertising about cancer, selling cancer drugs, when you get to the year 2011, you'll be no closer to a cure for cancer than you were in 1900, when cancer only claimed 1 out of 33 as a victim, and today it's 1 out of 2. So while I'm at it, I guess I might as well mention the scientific method. You see, we've been using science to find a cure to cancer. For 100 years, we've been using science. We've spent trillions of dollars and used science to find a cure to cancer. Number one, we don't have a cure to cancer. Number two, we don't know what causes it. And number three, we don't have any reasonable expectation of finding a cure or a cause in the next 10 years. For the next $5 trillion. So I would say to me, I don't want to spend any more money on it. If you want to spend your money marching and walking and donating for cancer, get after it. But I'm not going to give them a dime, not a nickel. I know what causes cancer, and I know how to cure it. And I know, best of all, how to prevent it. And so does this guy Wallach. And he lays it out pretty plainly here in this book called Rare Earths. Rare Earths. So if when you get through with the book, you say, well, screw you, Wallach, I'm not going to buy your supplements. Well, go buy them from somebody else. Go buy them from somebody else. But it'll be well worth the time, effort, and energy and the money you spend on the book, which, by the way, I don't even know what the price is. I said to you I'd ask and find out, and I lied to you, didn't do it. Maybe I can remember and do that next time. Getting back here then to the atomic numbers of these rare earths, remember they run from 57 to 71. Basic soils tend to be rich in minerals whose ionic radius is close to that of magnesium. Colloidal inorganic particles are referred to as clay. Clay minerals are primarily, oh my God, aluminosilicates. I think I got that one. Aluminosilicates, whatever the hell that is. Many of which swell in the water and act as ion exchangers. The hydrous water oxides of aluminum, iron, and manganese are responsible for the natural colors of most clays. For example, blue, gray, red, orange, black. They also function as scavengers for phosphate and some trace minerals and rare earths. I guess this is a good place here on page 40 to give you a reminder that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. If you'd like more information about the Law School or the Law Hour, please go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Remember, the Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, the Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. And if you'd like more information, please go to our homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated every week. It has our radio log schedule and archives. It can be accessed through the website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, economics, history, health, news, and current events 7 days a week. Remember, the Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the Law School at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. All right, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. We often endorse and we recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give out do not mean that those authors or publications that we endorse or recommend are going to reciprocate. Most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour are political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint is not necessarily 100% endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of our advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of this network or local radio station. If you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. In Chapter 3, the chapter on our anemic earth, anemic, he calls it. Well, wetlands in their deep layers contain high levels of humic acids. In their unique anaerobic environment and extraordinarily well-preserved remains of more than 2,000 humans have been found, most of them dating back to 3,000-4,000 years. Waterlogged plants in this anaerobic environment of the bog are slow to decompose. Dead plant material accumulates and becomes peat. Peat is the precursor to coal. The sphagnum mosses actually produce large amounts of substances with antibiotic characteristics, and they create an acid environment in many parts of New England and Wisconsin. Glaciers created kettle holes which filled in with peat vegetation. Now, a cross-section of plants that are typically found in a peat bog and what they contribute to the bog ecosystem include leatherleaf, rosemary, orchids. Orchids are symbiotic with acid-adapted fungi, which release plant nutrients from the peat. Pitcher plants, sundew, cranberry, and many others. Now, sphagnum moss is universally valued for agriculture and horticulture as a soil conditioner and a source of humic acids. Indians used the dried moss for baby diapers. In World War I, surgical dressings were made from the dried moss. Germany, Belgium, the Netherlands, and Denmark have consumed nearly all of their native supply of commercially harvestable peat bogs. Generally, peat is low in minerals. As an acid environment, leaches the minerals from the surface layers into the deeper layers as they flow away from the bog with the exiting springs. In coniferous forests, coniferous forests, the dead organic materials shed by the trees covers the soil where it is decomposed by fungi. The decomposition products include many organic acids which leach iron and aluminum out of the soils, out of the upper layers, forming podzol or spodzol in the lower layers. In deciduous forests, the dead organic leaf litter on the forest floor is mixed with the surface layers of the soil by earthworms, which are more numerous in deciduous forests than in acid coniferous forests, and the resulting soils are known as brown forest soils, which have a high content of clay and humus. In grasslands, the dead organic matter consists mainly of grass roots, which are intimately mixed with the soil. The rainfall is frequently too low to cause the leaching of the minerals, so the resulting virgin prairie soils tend to be rich in plant organic nutrients. They are known as charazims or mollisols, which have a high content of clay and humus. In deserts and acid regions, and covering vegetation of herbs, cactus, and woody shrubs does not cover the soil surface and does not return much organic matter to the soil. The low rainfall results in little or no leaching. The rate of clay formation in the desert soil is very low. Soluble inorganic soil constituents tend to accumulate in closed natural basins or salt lakes, like the Great Salt Lake or the Salton Sea. These desert soils are known as sarrazins or arid soils. Plants and animals that accumulate and concentrate usual or unusual amounts of minerals are known as accumulator organisms. Now, as far as supplements go, vitamins have historically gotten all of the glory, and minerals were mere stepchildren in the multiple vitamin that everyone asks, "Dear, did you take your vitamins today?" Well, of course they mean, "Dear, did you take your multiple vitamins and minerals today?" And as a result of minerals being found historically free in nature, or bone meal, and thus accessible to most everyone, the medical community rarely looks at minerals as something to prescribe or recommend as a cure for disease. Minerals, however, are in fact required by any and all body functions, from the basic subcellular, molecular, biological, metallic fingers of RNA and DNA to electrochemical, catalytic, structural, reproduction, maintenance, repair, and a plethora of miscellaneous functions in addition. As important as minerals are to human flesh and the very existence of man, humankind has placed more value on machines, futures, stocks and bonds, hospitals, space travel, lightweight metals for jet planes, fat-free diets, and bans on smoking than we do on our metabolic need for minerals themselves in our food supply. And the scary part of all of this is that we have had official warnings since 1936. You got that, kids? That's 1936. 70 years ago. The U.S. Senate document is number 264, published by the second session of the 74th Congress in 1936. You don't want to know what it says? Listen to this. It says, "Do you know that most of us today are suffering from certain dangerous diet deficiencies which cannot be remedied until the depleted soils from which our foods come are brought into proper mineral balance?" Quote, "The alarming fact is that foods, fruits, and vegetables and grains now being raised on millions of acres of land in 1936 no longer contain enough of certain needed minerals and are starving us no matter how much of them we eat." And did you know, you'd think, wouldn't you, that a carrot is a carrot is a carrot, that one is about as good as another as far as nourishment is concerned, but it isn't. One carrot may look and taste like another, and yet be lacking in a particular mineral element which our system requires and which carrots are supposed to contain, but are lacking in. And laboratory tests prove that the fruits and vegetables, the grains, the eggs, and even the milk and meats of today 1936 are not what they were a few generations ago, which doubtless explains why our forefathers thrived on a selection of foods that would starve us to death. And did you know that no man of today can eat enough fruits and vegetables to supply his stomach with the mineral salts that he requires for perfect health because his stomach isn't big enough to hold it all? And it's bad news to learn from our leading authorities that 99% of the American people are deficient in these minerals, and that a marked deficiency in any one of the more important minerals actually results in disease, any upset of the balance, any considerable lack of one or another element, however microscopic the body requirement might be. And we sicken, we suffer, and we shorten our lives. Lacking vitamins, the system can make some use of minerals, but lacking minerals, vitamins are useless. Unquote. Now, that Senate document 264, published by the 74th Congress, second session, 1936. Hey, kid, did you think your food is healthier and more nutritious today than it was in 1936? Well, that was before I was born. And our government was reporting to us that our sick, weak, depleted soils didn't contain enough nutrients to support a man in the United States of America. That's 70 years ago. Now, we had less disease 70 years ago than we have today. Much less disease. Cancer was not as prevalent. It was here. It was established. It was bad. It wasn't as prevalent as it is today. And as we mine our soils with more and more genetically modified seeds, we are going to have more and more disease out of sicker and sicker and weaker soils. The solution, kids, is that you got to get back to the soil. So years ago when I took a look at this, I said, you know, I live in Boise, Idaho, and I'm not going to survive here in Boise, Idaho. I'm going to die. So I'm going to get the hell out of here. So I left. Got out. I got back onto the land. And so I've got 11 raised beds down here. And in my raised beds, I go out in the fields and I collect cow manure. I go out underneath the trees and I collect the leaf mold. I have hauled truckloads of bottomland soil for 150 miles and deposited it here on my farm. Not to cover the whole farm, just to cover my raised beds, so that I can grow enough food to feed my family with nutritious, open-pollinated seeds. And in soil that's rich and strong and that will produce the kind of fruits and vegetables that we need to subsist and survive. Now, after 23 years of that, let me report the results. There's no sickness, there's no disease in this family, in this household. Now, we have some old-timey diseases. My wife still has cancer from 1978. She will die with that cancer. We hope she doesn't die from it, but she's certainly going to die with it. I got a boy here with epilepsy. He got the epilepsy long before, 23 years ago. And I got a girl that's 18 who's in perfect health. And she's been eating out of that garden. She's been eating good food. So I just thought I'd pass that along to you so that you know it can be done. Now, it's inconvenient and it's not fun and you're not going to like it and it's going to interfere with your lifestyle. So go ahead and just live the way you're living and die. This is my old partner used to say, I'm going to live hard, die young, and leave beautiful memories. Like Elvis Presley. He lived hard, died young, and left beautiful memories. I'm going to live soft, I'm going to die old, and leave no memories at all. That's the way I want to go. Now, there are those who would say that the statements of U.S. Senate Document 264 are out of date and not relevant to today, as we have better analytical tools to find nutrients in the soil that we couldn't find 58 years ago. Oh, so we couldn't find these nutrients 58 years ago. Well, he says, yes, we have better and more accurate tools with which to measure minerals in our farm and range soils today. However, the mineral content continues to deteriorate at an ever-accelerating pace as a result of farming, grazing, irrigating, and acid rain. And this means that if we depend solely upon our food for our daily share of minerals for our body's requirements, we have less of a chance of accomplishing it than winning the $100 million lottery or a Las Vegas crapshoot. You got that? Now, your chances, you know, if you just want to look at this analytically, your chances of surviving for all of you soldiers over in Iraq, let me tell you. As bad as the Iraq war is, and as many people as are being killed over there every day, your chances of living, for you 26 million Iraqis, your chances of living to die of old age at age 85 are better in Iraq than they are in an American hospital today in 2006. Now, people today are biting their nails and pulling out their hair, and they're going to vote Joe Lieberman out of office for his stand on the war in Iraq. And I'm not really for that war in Iraq on other grounds. I think it was poor policy and weren't thinking ahead. But if you look at the death toll in Iraq, if you take a look at all the people that are dying in Iraq, at 100 a day, let's just do that, 100 times 365, if the insurgents can kill 100 a day, every day, on average, year-round, they can kill 36,500 people. Let's round it off to 40,000. They can kill 40,000 people a year. All right. Now let's take 300,000, shall we? 300,000, that's how many we kill in American hospitals every year. And divide that by that same 40,000. Your chances of living in Iraq are 7.5 times greater than living through an American hospital experience. If you're just the average Iraqi or the average soldier working in the army over in Iraq. Boys and girls, let me tell you, you women and children that are left here in the United States, going to your pediatrician, going to your medical doctor, taking the prescription into your pharmacist, run a greater risk of death than your husbands or the people of Iraq on the streets being bombed and killed at the rate of 100 a day, every day. Day in and day out. 7.5 times greater risk of death in an American hospital today. So I don't know. You know, I'm not anxious to go to Iraq, but by God, let me tell you, you won't catch me in an American hospital either, and you won't catch me in an American allopathic doctor's office either. And I avoid those places like AIDS, herpes, and VD. Now, if you stay out of the doctor's office, stay out of the hospital, and stay out of Iraq, your chances of living to be 85 are just a hell of a lot greater. But if you got to choose between the hospital and Iraq, pick Iraq. You got a 7 times better chance. So in June of 1992, an Earth Summit report was issued in Rio de Janeiro that documented the decline in numbers of various rare and endangered species, enlarging holes in the ozone layer, disappearance of tropical rainforests, and indigenous people. And yet the most important and immediate crisis facing the human race was glossed over and relegated to the rear pages of the voluminous report, the decline of nutritional minerals in farm and range soils by continent over the past 100 years. Now, for some reason, I'm not quite sure why, you know, you get scientists out here and you've got statisticians, and, you know, I'm just a crummy plumber. I'm not very smart. Hell, I never went to college. I don't have any degrees after my name. But I pick up this book on rare earths, and here's a medical doctor. You know, his wife is a medical doctor, and he's a veterinarian, and he's got letters after his name, and he goes to the Harvard Medical School and says, hey, let me tell you what your chances of dying in an American hospital are, and let me show you what your chances of dying in Vietnam are. And your chances of dying in an American hospital are 53 times greater. 53 times greater than dying in Vietnam during that 10-year war. And so I just went a step further and added all the civilian casualties and deaths that are going over, going on over in Iraq. And you're still safer in Iraq than you are in an American hospital. And I'm a crummy plumber. And that's the kind of thing that I would contend ought to be reported. That's why I'm a reporter. That's why I'm reporting it. It seems like to me that that's a hell of a lot more important to you and your everyday garden variety lifestyle than the war in Iraq. Now, you might be opposed to the war in Iraq, but you ought to be even more opposed to going to an American hospital or to an American doctor's office. Your chances of getting killed are much greater in the hospital or the doctor's office. And here's the Rio Summit down here, and they go through all of the environmental degradation, and the most important factor that they could have reported on is the loss of minerals in the soils, and they put that in the table of contents on the back page, and it glossed over it, didn't say anything about it. Why? Why not? Is it because there's no solution? No, that's not true. I solved my problem. Hell, I left Boise, Idaho. I moved to Missouri. Let me tell you, I'm living on the worst real estate when I got here to Missouri. I got to tell you this little story. I'm from California. California, where they've got real dirt. Honest to God, real dirt in California. That's where I'm from. I moved to the Ozarks. You people in California, you'd never realize, you'd never understand this. I walked out and I looked at the soil, and it's rock and clay. Boys and girls, with a 6-foot iron rod in your hand that weighs 40 pounds, and a pick and a shovel, it takes 60 minutes to dig a post hole. An hour to dig a post hole that you could dig in California in 5 minutes with a shovel. That's how hard and nasty this soil is here. I looked at this and I said, this has got to be the anus of creation right here. I'm standing right on it. So I went down to a piece of ground over here that's got shelf rock underneath it. It's got about 12 inches of clay and rock on top of solid shelf rock. And it was our parking lot. The parking lot. I read a book called Plowman's Folly. I've reported on Plowman's Folly here on the program a couple of times. I read Plowman's Folly and I said, geez, I wonder if this guy, Faulkner, can do it in Indiana, could I do that here in the Ozarks? So for my ag class, see, I teach agriculture here. I'm an old-timey farmer. I've been farming for years. I'm an old-timey farmer. So in my ag class, I said, well, geez, if I'm going to do this, if I'm going to teach this, I ought to be able to you know, walk the walk and talk the talk. So I took the parking lot down here. I mean, that thing was so bare, it wouldn't even grow weeds. Honest to God. That's why we parked our cars there, because nothing would grow there. So I went down there, and I took Plowman's Folly, and I followed it religiously. And in about 5 years, I turned that into soil. I've got 6 raised beds on the parking lot right now. And that's where I produce all of my food and fiber. Right here, it's my family garden down there right now. And it produces, in fact, I'll give you a little illustration. Corn here in the United States is averaging around 10% protein. Mine averages 16%. Remember that wheat I reported to you in Kansas in 1880 that was producing 24% protein? I haven't grown any wheat down here, but I'm of a mind to do that, so that I can test the protein content and see if mine's up to 24% yet. I think I can come close to it. I know I can hit 18% protein in my wheat. I just know that. I think I can come close to 24. And I turned that into good organic black soil. Got just the neatest stuff. Got worms all over. Just really great stuff. Took some work. But I left the city. I came out here to the countryside. Took the worst piece of ground. I mean, if God made a worst piece of ground, he hid it from everybody else on planet Earth. I haven't seen it. Hid it from me. I've seen some bad ground. Boy, I'm telling you, this stuff down here now, that's it, gag a maggot. But you can turn that that bad soil into good soil. Takes a little time, effort, and energy. Takes a little sweat. He told me, he said, you know, by the sweat of your face, Gordon, shall you eat your bread. He wasn't whistling Dixie when he said that one. By God, you're gonna sweat. I'll tell you, especially here in Missouri. But it can be done. And if you do it, I think it'll be well worth your time, effort, or energy, because the difference is good health. You know, and then that good health translates into money. And that's the thing I like. The good health translates into money. For instance, I don't buy any insurance, so I save $9,000 a year. And I don't get sick, so I don't have to pay, you know, any deductibles, and then I don't have to dink around, you know, with lost time from work. See, your health insurance doesn't pay that lost time from work. So I haven't had any lost time. I don't think I've missed a day's work in 20 years, 30 years maybe. I don't know. It's been a long time. I missed a couple of weeks when I fell off that church. I remember that, but... But outside of a couple of jobs, you know, I'll take that back. Now, here on the house, I was putting a roof on this house back in 92. I fell off the roof. I lost a week. It hurt real bad. Fell off the roof, hurt real bad. So, you know, I've hurt myself a couple of times, but I haven't lost any time from sickness. So let me tell you about this guy again. The guy's name is Joel Wallach, and he got his fame from a seminar that he made called Dead Doctors Don't Lie. Dead doctors don't lie. This guy's just as funny. I mean, he's as funny as Dagwood Bumstead. And he pointed out that doctors, that is, allopathic medical doctors, die at age 57. 57. And these are the guys that are prescribing your medicines for you. And then as a doctor himself, he likes to poke a little fun at the profession. And so he said that 70% of these allopathic medical doctors, the same guys that you go to every day, 70% of them, can't get 25% of the prescriptions correct. So they flunked their pharmaceutical test, and they're given the wrong drugs to 25% of their patients who are seniors. This is people like us, you know, us old guys. So if you're an old guy like me and you go to the doctor and there's four of us walk in the office, he's going to give one of us the wrong drugs. And that's going to kill 200,000 of us a year and then cripple up a bunch more. Which leads me to the conclusion that you're safer in Iraq than you are in an American hospital or an American doctor's office. This is the guy that reveals that. Just as funny as he can be. Dead doctors don't lie. It's $30. Make sure that you ask for that. You'll love it. And then he's written this book, him and his wife, and here's their name and address. It's called Rare Earths. And it's Wellness Lifestyles, or just, you know, Dr. J. Wallach, P.O. Box 1222, Benita, California, 91908. That's P.O. Box 1222, Benita, California, 91908. Telephone number is 1-800-755-4656. Did you get that? 1-800-755-4656. I'll bet you if you went to Amazon.com or your local bookstore and you said, hey, I got to have this book called Rare Earths, published by, I don't know, the Ajax Publishing Company or Acme or somebody like that. It says here, let's see if I can find it. Oh, yeah, here it is. The Double Happiness Publishing Company. That's what leads me to believe he's publishing this himself. You know, he just wrote it up and took it over to some guy and printed it up. Double Happiness Publishing Company, same address, P.O. Box 1222, Benita, California, 91908. I think you'll be glad you bought a copy. I know I am. All right, let me give you a final reminder here on this program that you are listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard 7 days a week over the Internet worldwide in 75 countries or more. The information, if you'd like more of it, about the Law School and the Law Hour is on our website at georgegordon.org. Remember, the Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by pre-arrangement. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station, God willing, of course. Until then, thanks for listening, and good night, friends.